Hi, I'm Steven, the host of the Mina Surge podcast, your ultimate source for Web3 and fintech-related news in the MENA region. We're powered by Fintech Surge and Future Blockchain Summit in association with Jitex Global, an integral part of Expand North Star, taking place October 13th through 16th at Dubai Harbor. We're excited to be partnering with Web3 TV and its host, Ornella Hernandez, for Web3 Talks.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Web3 Talks. My name is Ornella Hernandez.
And I'm Stephen Bess.
And today we are talking to Arena Heber, who is a crypto lawyer based out of Dubai. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you for having me, guys.
So first question, because you're wearing an orange blazer, BTC or ETH? What's your preference?
Bitcoin, of course. I'm a Bitcoin maxi. And,
okay, that's what I thought.
I can't, you know, of course. It goes without saying.
Okay, what about you, Steven? BTC or ETH?
I've been told BTC. I'm not quite the expert, but that's the one that I have, and that's the one that I'll go with.
Okay.
Michael Saylor says, people who don't save their excess earnings in Bitcoin and they keep it in fiat, there's a name for them. He calls them poor.
Oh.
And I don't like being poor. No, so that is why it's
me
BTC
neither.
All the way.
So buy more Bitcoin, basically.
Sure. Stacking sats. That's what you should be number one priority in life.
Okay.
Maybe number two.
Number two.
We should put a disclaimer that we don't offer financial advice.
Yes, no, we do not. No, Arena, as a lawyer, I want to get to know what your day-to-day looks like.
Waking up in panic, panicking all day long, calling clients who are panicking, and then going to bed with anxiety and panic. Of course, I'm joking. But working in crypto is never a boring day.
Yeah.
Definitely never have a boring day. My entire team are on their toes, myself. We have to be on our toes because crypto laws are changing literally every minute. And my firm practices across 60 jurisdictions.
Wow.
We deal with 60 different regulators and, I don't know, hundreds of registrars when we establish legal entities.
Is this mostly in the Middle East and Europe, or which jurisdictions do you work in the most?
Basically, any jurisdiction that is crypto-friendly. So, for
okay.
example, when we're establishing DAO legal wrappers, we go for any jurisdiction that will have us or a jurisdiction that will be friendly for that particular purpose. So, no, absolutely no limit as to geography. The limit is only how friendly is that jurisdiction towards my client's needs and purposes. So, all the way from Panama to Singapore. So, absolutely. We don't have prejudices against certain country or certain jurisdiction as long as they're friendly for our needs and purposes, and the client can meet their requirements. So going back to the day of a crypto lawyer, because crypto laws changing so quickly and there's so many jurisdictions that we deal with, we have to be on our toes all the time. We're picking up the phone, talking directly to financial regulators. We're trying to calm a client down. If there is an issue, we are quite often relocating the clients from a jurisdiction that was friendly 5 minutes ago. Now it's not friendly anymore, so we have to literally pick up and go. And we've done that I don't know how many times. Remember when Malta in 2018 announced themselves to be a blockchain island,
right.
Hundreds of companies set up there, and then literally 5 minutes later, they're all calling up and saying, move us to the Middle East, move us to the UAE right now, pronto, ASAP, we need it now. So we've moved a lot of these projects here, and at some point, it was very easy to get banking for crypto companies in the US. So a lot of our clients set up SPVs there. Not anymore. So when the current US regime declared a war against crypto companies, we had to pack them up and move them elsewhere. It's quite common in emerging industry because there's still countries and jurisdictions are still finding their place in so it's definitely not boring. So all the lawyers out there, I really encourage you to consider a career in crypto law. If you do not like peace, if you do not like sleeping, 9 hours at night, and if you seek excitement and also Any area that is so uncertain and so fast moving provides great career opportunities,
yeah.
provides great financial returns, because a crypto lawyer can charge a premium on their expertise rather than a corporate and commercial lawyer, because we have at least 600 of them in GLT alone, right? Where we are now. So definitely not boring.
So then how is it like being a lawyer in the UAE then, where generally overall it is very friendly and it has a lot of regulations for crypto and crypto companies. But at the same time, there was a recent outlaw of crypto payments for merchants and individuals. So maybe you could go into that a little bit and just explain what that implies exactly.
So I've been I've been a lawyer in the UAE for over 16 years now. I came in 2008 working for a national oil company. Mm. Imagine or not, before crypto, wow. I had a career as well. I was in oil and gas. I was in oil and gas for 13 years working for national oil companies, international oil companies. So when I came here in 2008, where we are was literally being built, like GLTs was literally being built. It was super exciting. It was nothing. And look what UAE has achieved over this short period of time. So I was working for national oil companies, international oil companies, negotiating deals between governments, all in oil and gas. I did a huge joint venture with Mubadala, its sovereign wealth fund. It was $11.5 billion job that we did in Central Asia, developing oil and gas fields. So definitely not boring being a lawyer in this part of the world, because it's growing so fast, it's developing so fast, things happen so fast. I mean, Australia, where I'm from, if you want to pass a legislation, Parliament will be discussing it for, 15 years till you die of old age. Here, things happen a bit too fast, maybe. And that's why sometimes there might be something, a regulation implemented, and then maybe the consequences are not thoroughly considered. And this is what I'm hoping has happened with the payment services, payment token services regulation that has recently been implemented by the UAE Central Bank. So first of all, what is UAE Central Bank? It's a financial regulator. It's a federal financial regulator in the UAE. We have two federal financial regulators, Central Bank and Emirates and Security and Commodity Authority, SEC. You know, you have SEC in the US, we have ESCA in the UAE. So Central Bank regulates banking and insurance industry. So if you want to open a bank in the UAE, you go and get a license from the UAE Central Bank. Or if you're pretending to be a bank without a license, Central Bank will come to you and ask, what is going on? Because you're not supposed to be conducting banking services without a license. Central Bank also establishes monetary policy, and they are in charge of UAE dirham, right? So they issued payment token services regulation, which is all fine. Basically, it is a stablecoin regulation regulating that stable coins are to be licensed in the UAE, that we do not have another situation like Luna. Remember right. when we had a $60 billion wiped out of the industry? $60 billion. That was, that was really a huge blow to the industry. Is it good to have stablecoin regulation? Yes. Europe has just implemented one called MiCA. Singapore is working on one. Or maybe implemented already. Hong Kong is working on one. It's absolutely fine to have a stablecoin regulation, because if you tell me, here's my coin and it's pegged to US dollar 1-to-1, you hold my coin and it will always be $1, you have to be regulated, because you're really acting as a bank, right? Because you're holding US dollars in exchange for this token on blockchain. Really close to banking sort of sector.
So this has to do with the UAE stablecoin.
So, but the regulations that got passed, they talk about regulating foreign stable coins. Mm. So, for example, USDT, USDC,
okay.
and issuing a local dirham-backed stable coin. So far, so good.
But
no
that
issues.
Hasn't been, there isn't,
there
that
isn't
doesn't
one.
Exist yet.
Yeah, there isn't one, because okay. the regulations just got implemented okay. 2 weeks ago, right? There isn't one yet. I'm sure some very intelligent people are working on that now. So far, so good. The only thing I have an issue with, and I had to cause a little bit of media noise right. around yeah. it, because I'm one of those lawyers who actually read the regulations in its entirety, not just the press release about the regulation and get like, oh, we have stablecoin regulations, that's amazing. No, I will actually read it. And so one of the, there's one particular clause that has caused a lot of concern for me personally and the entire industry, is that no merchant and no person can accept virtual assets for their goods and services in the UAE in the course of business. So for example, you're an accountant sitting here in Dubai, a foreign crypto company who has no bank account, because don't forget, very few crypto companies actually have bank accounts, or Web3 companies, because we're in the crypto economy, right? I'm outside of the banking right. sector. I'm my own bank. Thank you very much. Sure. I can send you $1 million worth of Bitcoin right now, and we don't have an intermediary. That's how God himself, Satoshi Nakamoto, intended, right? So back to the regulation. So you cannot accept virtual assets for your goods and services unless that virtual asset is a regulated Dirham payment token. Okay. We don't have one yet.
Right.
However, there is a 12 months pause on this clause, and this clause will come into force in 12 months' time. You know, by then we should have one, I suppose. Another exception in that clause is you can accept regulated foreign stablecoins, let's say USDC, USDT, or any other stablecoin that gets regulated here, in exchange for the other virtual assets. Let's say you have an NFT marketplace. You're selling an NFT, which is a virtual asset, so you can sell it for a regulated stablecoin, whichever it becomes within the 12 months. So what are the implications? There's no implications for you if you're just buying Ethereum, holding it on your wallet and minding your own business. There's no implications for
okay.
you. Implications for you if you are running, let's say, an NFT marketplace, and within the UAE, you cannot sell those NFTs anymore. Sorry, in 12 months' time, you won't be able to sell these NFTs unless that stablecoin that you're selling it for is a regulated stablecoin. Let's say USDT and USDC decide not to get regulated in the UAE, right? What are your options? What are other stablecoins are there? There's maybe 300 different stablecoins, but is there any liquidity?
No.
Not that much. Another implication, which is something more I'm worried about, is, like I mentioned to you, 95% of Web3 crypto companies don't have bank accounts.
I've also heard that Turkey has completely banned and outlawed crypto all around.
Yes, and that's a good example of a country with a struggling currency trying to maintain control over their currency. Mm. And that law outlawing crypto usage and crypto payments specifically says this is to protect Turkish lira, which is fine. But imagine you're an individual living in Turkey and your savings are being right. eroded by crazy inflation. The prices are doubling, tripling over the last, let's say, a few months.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do?
Crypto.
You will flee into an asset which gives the protection for your family well-being. Can be USDT, can be Bitcoin, can be Ethereum, can be dollars, can be euros for those who are not crypto savvy. In the UAE, we do not have this problem. UAE dirham is pegged to US dollar, right. and US dollar currently is the strongest currency. I have personally a huge problem. I have personally a huge problem with US dollars. Funding things that I'm very against all over the world. But politics aside, or personal inclination aside, US dollar is the strongest currency. Yeah. And dirham is backed by US dollar. So we do not need to protect dirham.
Right. They keep the price controlled pretty yes. much at the same rate.
And yeah. that's the role of the central bank, right? To maintain these monetary controls. Mm-hmm. And what is beautiful about the UAE, you can come in here, you can bring your capital, you can do business, you can make money, and then you can take it back to your country and purchase a house. Try getting money out of Turkey. Good luck to you. Try getting money out of Russia. Try getting money out of India. Try getting money out of any other country in the world which is so protectionist against their for their currency. You can't do that. And you know what? Entrepreneurs don't go to these countries. When was the last time you heard the largest, you know, AI company or Web3 companies opening an office in Russia? Never. Why? Because good luck getting out of there. When have you heard of a large conglomerate opening, you know, with all my love for the Indian culture and people, when have you heard of a huge Bybit moving to India or Binance moving to India? You don't hear these things. They're moving to the UAE. Why? Right. Because of the leadership of the UAE have very wise economic policies, have very wise entrepreneurship policies, supporting entrepreneurship. You come here, you make money, you can take this money back, buy a villa in Italy and live your life, right? So does UAE dirham need protectionist policies? I don't know, I don't work for the central bank, but in my mind, UAE needs more open economic policies to increase foreign direct investments, to increase jobs, to increase more entrepreneurs moving to the UAE. Do you know how many jobs are being created by SMEs? More than 85% of the jobs in the entire UAE are created by entrepreneurs like yourself, like myself. SMEs create all the jobs. We're the bloodline of the economy, not because, you know, I'm so arrogant or anything. That is the fact. 85% of the jobs are created by entrepreneurs. If you tell entrepreneur that he or she cannot contract in a currency that is convenient for them because it is commercially convenient, what's next?
So what's going to happen to your baker friend?
My baker friend is such a Bitcoin maxi.
Yeah.
He will be doing it despite any prohibition. Not because he has no respect for the law. It's because he has too much love for Bitcoin, I guess.
So how did your love for Bitcoin come about in the first place? Or for crypto in general?
Bitcoin. It started with Bitcoin. I was born in a country that collapsed. My parents were engineers in Soviet Union. One day, they woke up with Soviet rubles becoming nothing. There were days there where they couldn't get food. There were days where my mom couldn't put dinner on the table. And I remember that very well because I was thinking, just yesterday we could go to a shop and buy bread. Now we can't? What do you mean we have no bread? As a child, that does so much to your understanding of the world.
It's traumatizing.
It's very traumatizing. Yeah. And I'm not saying, oh, look at me, I'm so poor, such a traumatizing childhood. You know, millions of people live in countries where currency is collapsing every day. But as a child, I remember I could not understand how come my mom cannot go to a shop and buy bread anymore. I could not understand that. And then when my family fled Soviet Union with, you know, nothing to their name and moved to Australia and worked hard, I kind of understood, all right, if you have a good government, you have good government policies, that's good. But you cannot always trust the government fully. That's why when I discovered Bitcoin in 2011.
Okay, super early then.
I was so curious because I wanted to understand what does that mean having peer-to-peer money with no government involved, with no intermediary involved, with no bank involved. I was so curious to understand. So my first degree is economics. And when I learned more about Bitcoin, I was like, this will not work. This will not work because this is everything that they told us at school is it's exactly the opposite of what they taught us in school. And being a lawyer, I thought no government will allow for Bitcoin to exist. I was very wrong.
Yeah. What changed your mind?
I did not understand the power of the network. Bitcoin network is so big and so powerful, no government can shut it down. No government can stop it. I can send you as much Bitcoin as I have right now, and no government is here to tell me that I cannot do that. And that's how, you know, when you went through a traumatic event where you couldn't understand why the government literally took away everything your family had, You stop thinking about, I should have a plan B.
Yeah.
I love my government. I trust my government. But I have a plan B. Right. Thank you very much.
Okay. And so what would you like to see more of in this industry or less of even as a lawyer? Like, what are your clients maybe worried about the most?
Scams. Mm. Scams and frauds. Oh, my God. This needs to be serious work put into weeding the bad apples from the industry. Dubai is such a prosperous place, and it attracts a lot of really good players that are trying to do good, creating jobs, supporting the economy. But unfortunately, it also attracts a lot of bad players and who we need to get rid of. How do we do that? Having good stable coin regulations is fantastic because we want to have good stable coins. Regulated, fully backed by fiat, it's fantastic. But outlawing crypto payments that may impede business transactions. Not only that, also the standing of the UAE as the Web3 hub internationally.
Yeah. Some people are calling it the next Silicon Valley.
Absolutely, and I would absolutely agree with them. I'm really looking forward to clarifications from the central bank that this clause applies, let's say, only to retail sales, which is absolutely fine. We don't want a grandma to get scammed when she goes to buy groceries, which is absolutely fine. Or let's say this clause does not apply to international transactions, which is fine. So you can still receive USDT from your client in Panama who has absolutely no other means in transacting here, which is absolutely fine. But there needs to be clarification. There must be clarification. There's another thing I want to mention. Crypto payments, all fine and good. Think about AI. An AI agent providing services to another AI agent. How are they going to pay each other? By bank transfer? By CBDC transfer? No, they'll pay each other in sats. They'll pay each other in units of Ethereum. What is the smallest unit of Ethereum? I think it's Wei. They pay each other in Weis.
Right.
Will they pay each other in bank transfers and CBDCs?
No.
Absolutely not. And UAE is currently looking to develop the largest AI hub in the region and maybe even globally. And I truly believe they have everything you need in order to do that. Willing government, supportive government. So why ban the technology that AI will be using literally in a very short period of time?
Yeah.
Why prohibit it? Very, very interesting.
I wanted to ask about advice for regulators. More so than anything,
regulators.
Because you obviously deal with regulators from about 60 different countries, and you deal with making sure that your clients are compliant with those regulators. As we see that, if you open it too much, you allow a lot of room for the problematic players. If you close it too much, you stifle growth in the space. Do you always have the right answer, or do you sort of just watch and see what happens when it comes to regulators making policies?
A lot of the regulators are my clients, so they pay me for my advice. For those,
so this is you that actually did this new outlaw.
God forbid, absolutely not. Central bank is not my client.
Okay.
unfortunately. I would love to. Call me, I'm free. So the advice for the regulators is consider the larger picture. Always consider the larger picture. Because it's absolutely could be okay and well to do something in the short term, but then what are the implications? But also learn from the mistakes of other jurisdictions. How many times has China banned Bitcoin? How many times?
Dozens of times.
Dozens of times.
Yeah.
Have they succeeded?
No.
Absolutely not. So why do something which was a complete failure elsewhere? Question. Another question, look at Malta. How many millions of euros they spend in making themselves a blockchain island? Have they succeeded? No.
It's a gambling island, I think.
Well, it's a gambling island. They've been a European gambling island, but they wanted to rebrand themselves as a blockchain island. Maybe they didn't have the best branding experts. But learn what mistakes Malta did, for example, and let's not do that. Good idea. Look at Gary Gensler, our favorite central banker in the world. Look what he's doing. Probably don't do that. So learn from the mistakes of other jurisdictions, because that would speak louder than successes, because you do not really know where success came from. But the mistakes are a little bit too obvious. And of course, it's very easy for us to sit here and teach the regulators how to do what. But if you're a regulator, put yourself in the regulator's, in my defense for the regulators, put yourself in the regulator's shoes. whenever they do something, they get criticized. If they don't do something, they get criticized. If they try to do something good, like paying, like passing stablecoin regulation, which is good, then they'll get somebody like me who criticizes one tiny clause, not criticizing, but asking for clarification to see what are the implications for the industry. So I feel really bad for the regulators. Like, I would not want to be in their shoes, because there will be somebody who's always saying, oh, you should have done this, you should have done that. So being a regulator is a very, very tough job, for sure. I wouldn't want to be in their shoes, but they're in their shoes. So learning from the mistakes of other regulators is probably one of the loudest learning lessons you could receive.
Okay, good advice. And thank you for all those clarifications, Arena. Last question, what is the best way for our viewers to get in touch with you, to reach out or use your services?
Just message me on LinkedIn, Arena Heaver. It's very easy to find me. My team looks at all the messages and answers all the messages. Be careful with Instagram and Twitter. There's about 600 Arena Heavers on Twitter and about 500 Arena Heavers on Instagram. Okay. None of them are me. They are scammers trying to scam people for money, pretending to be me. My mom gets 20 messages a day asking for one Bitcoin from a fake Arena Heaver account, which is really disturbing. She's an old lady. Every time she gets really scared. So be careful online with the scammers and impersonators. Not just me, but you know, everyone in the industry. Be very careful.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so LinkedIn is the best way.
LinkedIn is the best way. Arena Heaver.
Okay. Sure. Awesome, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Web3 Talks. Reach out to Arena if you have any questions, and also make sure to check out other episodes of the Web3 Talks and the Mina Surge podcast.